Iowa Public Radio is fundraising right now, and we could really use your support. The pace of news will not let up, and neither will we. Show your support for this service when you donate now at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer on this December 21st. Later in our second half hour, we'll revisit our winter coach series to learn when you can safely walk on lake ice, if that's your thing. Also, on this shortest day of the year, today is the winter solstice, we'll be joined later by University of Northern Iowa meteorologist Alan Czarnecki. He'll give us a take on how this winter is shaping up and likely to develop in the coming weeks. Though this first half hour, let's focus on activities of our nation's highest court, the U.S. Supreme Court. Joining us to do that, Todd Pettis, professor of law. He's the H. Blair and Joan V. White Chair in Civil Litigation at the University of Iowa College of Law. Hi, Todd.
How are you, Ben?
I'm doing well. And those who don't know already, we like to have you join us periodically to walk us through some of the cases, get some background stories in the cases that reach the highest or chosen by the U.S. Supreme Court, and to find out what the arguments are, the decisions are, and the significance they may have in our lives. Let's get walking through these cases, Todd. Let's start off with two cases that have to do with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Go ahead. What do you want to point to first of all?
Well, a couple cases here that are really important. Tanzin versus Tanvir is one of them, a ruling that came down just about a week ago. Congress passed a statute a while back called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. We pronounce it sometimes by its acronym, RFRA. And what that statute says is that if the federal government is going to do something that burdens your exercise of religion, then it has to have a very, very strong justification for doing it. It's been a very influential statute. Some people might remember the Hobby Lobby contraception case from several years ago, for example. That was a RFRA case. What happened in this case was some FBI agents allegedly approached some men who had immigrated to the United States from Muslim countries, and the agents asked these men to spy on other members of their mosques. And the men refused to do so. And what is alleged is that the FBI agents retaliated against them by putting them on the no-fly list. And so, you know, they had bought plane tickets. One of the guys shows up at the airport thinking he's going to fly somewhere, and he's told he's not going anywhere. And so what they did is they filed a lawsuit against those FBI agents individually, asking those men personally to pay damages. And the question in front of the Supreme Court was, does this statute, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, does it authorize them to do that? And the Supreme Court said yes. And so from the point of view of religious liberty, that's a pretty significant ruling for everyone in the United States. What it means is anybody who works for the federal government, if they do something that burdens your religion in a way that this statute forbids, you can sue that federal government employee for damages in a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. And was it clear these individuals, these FBI agents, were acting on their own under the direction of the, you know, upper tiers of the FBI or not, or didn't that matter here?
Well, that's what's alleged. We haven't even had a trial yet, because what happened is when this lawsuit was filed, the FBI agents, this is the first time the Supreme Court was asked, does this statute actually authorize ordinary people like you and me to file lawsuits like this against federal government employees? And it's that question that came up right away when the lawsuit was filed. So before they had a trial and kind of sorted through the important factual questions like the one that you asked, the courts had said, no, you can't file, the lower court where we started had said, no, you can't file a lawsuit under this statute. So it went up to the Supreme Court on that question. Mm-hmm. Now these guys have gotten a green light for their lawsuit. And so unless it settles, they'll have to sort through questions like that. And we'll see whether the agents admit doing what they did and who gave them the authority to do it, if they did do it, or whether they were acting totally on their own.
Mm-hmm. Another religious freedom case we heard about more in the news. This has to do with our pandemic and New York State, the state of New York, limiting the size of gatherings in places of worship. Tell us about that one.
Right. Governor Cuomo in New York and and other officials there, they've set up a system kind of looking around the state, identifying COVID hotspots. And they classify these based on color. So if a zone, an area of a city, for example, is designated as a red zone, then that's kind of the worst possible scenario. And then it goes orange and yellow and so forth. And when the region in which you sit is assigned a color, it has implications. And one of those implications is occupancy limits. And so, for example, if you are within a red zone, that means you cannot have more than 10 people inside a building unless you are an essential service of one kind or another. If you're in an orange zone, one step down, then you can't have more than 25 people. And a Roman Catholic diocese and a Jewish synagogue filed a lawsuit saying, we're within these zones, a red zone or an orange zone, which means we're being told we can't have more than 10 people in our building. More than 25 people in our building. And some of these buildings are huge. You know, they hold hundreds of people, maybe even up to 1,000 people, but we're only allowed a dozen or so. And so they brought a lawsuit under the Free Exercise Clause, a different source, of course, of religious freedom rights in this country. They brought a claim under the Free Exercise Clause saying, you're burdening our religious practice. We're to get together on Saturdays, Sundays, other times during the week, and you're not letting us do it. And the Supreme Court ruled in their favor. And just in a quick nutshell, the really key principle here is that when the government is going to do something that impacts religion, it has to be acting neutrally with respect to religion, meaning it has to be imposing the same rule on everybody. It can't single religion out for worse treatment. Mm. And a majority of the Supreme Court, it was a 5-4 decision, but a majority of the Supreme Court said, Governor Cuomo had singled out religion for particularly poor treatment because department stores, garages, acupuncture clinics, any number of other things, because of the way they were classified, even if they fell within one of these zones, they could have as many people as they wanted in their buildings, but not churches and not some other kinds of entities too. But the court looked at it and said, well, if you're letting these other kinds of, you know, secular entities like a department store, you're letting them decide for themselves how many people to allow in, then you need to let the churches, the synagogues decide for themselves as well.
I wonder to speculate on whether the latest, the newest Supreme Court justices, also the very newest Justice Amy Coney Barrett, whether her addition to the court, had that not happened, or had there been a different justice, would this have come out differently? Or does this look, was the decision here also the liberal justices decided for this?
Well, no, the liberal justices did not go along with this, and neither did Chief Justice Roberts. Chief Justice Roberts and a couple of the other Democratic appointees said, you know, we really shouldn't even be getting into the weeds on this case, because after the lawsuit was filed, Governor Cuomo had backed down and reclassified these zones as being in the yellow zone. And now, because they're in yellow areas, they are now allowed, even before this Supreme Court ruling came down, allowed to decide for themselves how many to allow in. And so some justices, Chief Justice Roberts among them, said, well, they can come back if they're put back in one of these super hot zones. They can come back. But right now, there's really no need for us to decide this. So, you know, trying to gauge Justice Barrett's impact on rulings like this is tough. She's with the conservatives so far, but she's only participated in a very, very small number of cases. And so trying to gauge, you know, what impact she's having on the court more broadly is difficult. She hasn't split from the conservatives yet, but I'm sure she will in due course. But we'll be looking closely, of course, to see what it is that would cause her to split, as Chief Justice Roberts here, for example, split from Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch and others.
If you've just joined us, Professor of Law Todd Pettis of the University of Iowa College of Law is with us, walking us through some court cases, some of which we've heard about in our news, some of which we haven't, like this next one that involves the state of Delaware's attempt to achieve some political balance for the appointments to its state's major courts. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, you know, we care a lot in Iowa about our courts and how justices are chosen for the Iowa Supreme Court and so forth. And we have our own system. Delaware has a very unique system in this country, and they require partisan balance on the Delaware Supreme Court and a couple of other high courts in that state. Meaning, you know, if you have an odd number of justices, say you have seven, no more than four of them can be one party, no more than three of them than the other party. Okay, so you can't load a court up with a bunch of Republicans or appointees or a bunch of Democrats. And what this case is called Carney versus Adams involves an attorney named James Adams who's registered as an independent. And under Delaware law, you're not eligible for a seat on the state's high court unless you are a registered Republican or Democrat. And then again, there's got to be balance between them. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'm an independent, and this violates my First Amendment right of free association. I don't want to associate with Republicans or Democrats. I want to be an independent, and that should not render me ineligible for a seat on the Delaware Supreme Court. And what the United States Supreme Court held here, and it was a unanimous ruling, was that Mr. Adams did not have what we call standing. That is, he did not have any particular injury or harm that he was suffering because we had no idea whether he would ever even apply for a seat if he were eligible. And something that cast doubt on that is he, for years, had been a registered Democrat, and seats had come open that Democrats were eligible for, and he never applied for any of them. And so this whole question about whether Delaware's arrangement violates free association rights of people who aren't Republicans and Democrats, the court punted on that and said, we're going to wait to decide that issue, if ever, when we've got someone who can demonstrate in some kind of non-speculative way that they are being hurt. And, okay. And this guy couldn't do it.
Okay, he had, in your words, no standing in legal terms.
Right,
okay,
exactly.
So this may pop up in a future case when someone does have standing or is determined to have standing. Let's talk about a case. Have you walk us through a case that received perhaps the most press of any of the cases we'll talk about today. This had to do with Texas, and Texas filing directly with the Supreme Court, trying to stop four other states, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, from casting their electoral votes. These are swing states for Joe Biden. And here, what was the thinking of the court here?
Right. Well, I'm glad you sequenced them in this way because it's a perfect transition. It's the same principle of standing. So just like this guy up in Delaware who says, I want to be a Delaware Supreme Court justice and I can't. And the Supreme Court said, well, too speculative. You can't show any injury. Same legal ground here. So this is the state of Texas seeking permission to file a lawsuit in the Supreme Court, which is itself kind of unique. And let me just spend a less than a minute or so explaining mm-hmm. that. Usually cases get up to the Supreme Court only as a form of appeal. There's been a legal proceeding below. Someone's not happy with how it came out. So they go up to the United States Supreme Court asking them to fix the problem. But under the Constitution, there are some kinds of cases that the Supreme Court is authorized to hear right out of the gate at the trial level. So there's only one court and it starts and finishes in the U.S. Supreme Court. And one category of case, the main category of such case, is one where a state is a party. And every year there are several cases of this sort that the Supreme Court hears where there's been no lower proceeding. States will get an argument, for example, about water rights. A river will flow through one state down to the next, and the downriver state might say that the upriver state is taking too much water out of the river or something. And the Supreme Court is the place where you go when you file that lawsuit, and they usually hire someone called a special master to help them. That's what Texas did here. They said, we're not even going to start with the lower courts. We're going right to the Supreme Court, and we're going to ask them to take this case. And what we're alleging, we, the state of Texas, is that in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin, they are choosing their electors for the Electoral College in an unconstitutional way. And we don't want that to happen. So we're going to go to the Supreme Court and ask the Supreme Court to forbid those states from doing it. And what the United States Supreme Court held, and again, this was a unanimous decision. They didn't issue a written opinion about it. It was just a quick couple sentences letting us know what their ruling was. They found that Texas didn't have standing. Texas couldn't tell any story, couldn't point to anything that would show how it, Texas, was being hurt by what was going on with the selection of electors in these other states. What the argument that they tried to make, and it was not successful, was, well, we Texans are represented in the United States Senate. And in the United States Senate, when there's a tie, the vice president breaks the tie. Mm-hmm. And if Pennsylvania and these other states are allowed to continue down the electoral path that they're on, we're going to have Kamala Harris as a vice president. She's going to be breaking ties. That's not who ought to be breaking ties in the Senate. Okay, so that's the narrative that they had to try to put together to show how they were being hurt. And the court had no time for it. They, again, just in a couple sentences, they said Texas does not have any injury that gives them standing to be able to litigate in the federal courts. So they dismissed the case. They refused to take the case.
Was that decision authored? Did it have an author behind
no.
it? Do we know how the justices came down on it?
No, we don't. With two small exceptions, the Justices Alito and Thomas, they have taken the position that the United States Supreme Court can never decline to hear a case brought to it by a state because the Constitution says that the Supreme Court, quote, shall have jurisdiction or power, if you will, to hear cases like this. And mm-hmm. Alito and Thomas read that as mandatory language. And so they wrote just a sentence or two saying, we would have taken this case, but not have granted any further relief. In other words, Texas was asking for an injunction to immediately block these states from sending electors to the Electoral College. And Alito and Thomas said, well, you know, we're not going to do that, but we do think that the Constitution at least obliges us to let them in the front door. But right. the rest of the justices, in an without an opinion, just a note that the clerk basically sends along to the world saying the justices have decided and they're not willing to hear you.
Mm-hmm. Let me read a little bit of this Associated Press article that just came across a couple hours ago about, well, the court cases having to do with the election continue. Here's the AP report here. Undeterred by dismissals and admonitions from judges, President Donald Trump's campaign continued its unprecedented efforts to overturn the results of the November 3rd election Sunday, saying it had filed a new petition with the Supreme Court. The petition seeks to reverse a trio of Pennsylvania Supreme Court cases having to do with mail-in ballots and asks the court to reject voters' will and allow the Pennsylvania General Assembly to pick its own slate of electors. Now, this is it not, Todd, much like some other cases that have been already ruled upon, over 50, I believe, comment on this latest one.
I don't think there's any chance at all that the Supreme Court's going to get involved. The justices have shown zero appetite for jumping in. They had they've had opportunities to jump in if they want. They've shown no interest. None of the justices have shown any interest in doing it. And so I think the Trump administration or the Trump campaign, if you will, they're going through the motions of filing these lawsuits. I think that the smart people in the room on those decisions believe that they're going to get some political mileage out of doing so. But I don't think that the smart people in the room in those instances truly have any belief that this is going to yield a victory for them. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely not going to happen.
Several weeks ago in the news, another Supreme Court ruling, or rather non-ruling, you tell me, Todd, this had to do with whether the president can exclude undocumented immigrants from the 2020 census count. And the ruling there?
Well, you're right to say, is it a ruling, is it not a ruling? What they, just to recap what you just said, what the case is about, President Trump has announced that, and this would be the first time in U.S. history that this happened, if it does indeed happen, that when gathering all the census data and reporting it to Congress about how many people live in each state, which is an obligation under federal law that the president has, he has announced that he does not want to include any people who are in the country unlawfully in those totals. And so if a state like California, for example, has got a large number, let's say they've got 1 million people who are in the country illegally, he does not want that included in California's count, which, of course, would affect California's representation in the House of Representatives, because a state gets seats in the House of Representatives based on its population. And so there's a legal fight between Trump and a variety of others, states and others, about whether it's permissible under the Constitution and under federal statutes for the president to make those exclusions. Again, it's never happened before in United States history. And in my view, the text of the Constitution and statutes makes it pretty clear that this cannot happen. And what the Supreme Court held in a short little ruling, and Justice Barrett is in the majority on this, but didn't separately write anything, they held that it's too soon, too speculative. And it kind of goes back to the same principle of standing that we've talked about with this guy in Delaware who wanted to be on the court, Texas wanting to be. We talked about needing to have an injury. And what they've said, what the Supreme Court said here was, we don't yet know whether there will be an injury, and if so, what that injury will be. There's questions about whether the Census Bureau is going to be able to provide numbers that show with any degree of certainty how many people are in each state unlawfully. Apparently, they're digging through records that they have and so forth, trying to pull this together. But there's some serious questions about whether the Census Bureau will be able to get those numbers pulled together. And then we'll have to see once, if even if they do, what does President Trump ultimately decide to do in what he reports to Congress, and which states, if any, will those numbers hurt? And the, in the eyes of a majority of the court, there's just too much speculation there. And so that issue could well be back, and it could come back to the Supreme Court quickly, but they weren't ready to decide it yet.
Todd, in the final minute, this will have to be quick. How would you sum up President Trump's impact on the Supreme Court, but I guess also not only the Supreme Court, three justices in 4 years, Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, but also how many appointments to federal and courts and courts of appeals? This is a huge impact for such a short time in office, isn't it?
A tremendous impact. I'd say probably an unprecedented impact, largely because we have a match between the political party that holds the White House and the political party that holds the Senate, where all these judges and justices have to be confirmed. And in this area, President Trump has driven right down the center of the road. He has picked candidates that mainstream conservatives can readily rally around. And so just quickly, at the federal circuit courts of appeals level, the intermediate level, he has appointed about one third of the federal judiciary in just one term. A huge impact.
Yeah. Okay. It's all the time we have, but we'll have plenty of time to talk in 2021. How about that, Todd?
I would love it.
Oh, I would love it too. We always love your explanation of our high courts and other courts. Todd Pettis, professor of law, the H. Blair and Joan V. White Chair in Civil Litigation at the University of Iowa College of Law. Until next time, Todd, we'll talk to you in 2021. Happy solstice.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you and to all your listeners. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll find out when it's safe to walk on lake ice. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment.